you've done in the presentations before I actually get into tech. Firstly, what this presentation does is that it goes right back to the deliberations on why we put in the amendment, the B36 amendment. It takes us back through the discussion that happened, and it takes us back through the amendments that were made when the portfolio committee in principle accepted B36 with amendments, apart from the clause that had been put in relating to the Minister of DME as the competent authority. So that's the first part of the presentation, is that. The second part of the presentation deals with the issues around mining and goes through this very long history of the interactions between the two departments and the agreements that have been made. And then the third part of the presentation is goes through clause by clause what the implementation of that agreement would mean in terms of further amendments to B36, and in particular further insertions of text coming from the MPRDA as a result of that agreement that would need to go into NEMA. So that's the presentation. So it's fairly long and substantial, but I think that it does contain everything, so it's worth going through. We then have a set of other documents. The first, there is a briefing document to the portfolio committee that explains what the department has done. There is then, we erroneously, in putting together the documents, and because we were struggling with power cuts and people late and photocopy machines that weren't working, we erroneously put in, there's a draft agreement between the two ministers that has not yet been signed by them. It's been kind of prepared by the department. So we've taken that out. So the thing that is crossed out, you'll find in your packs, is that because that document is not yet a final document, but the text of what is in it we'll go through. And then what we've done is then at the back there is annexures. C is looking at what needs to happen to both NEMA and the MPRDA in B, and then the last is the actual amendments that are proposed to NEMA. So it's quite to Bill 36. So it's actually quite a substantial set of documentation. And then obviously you've also got B36 itself, which is the bill that we considered in this committee a while ago. Okay, but I think that essentially the presentation contains most of what we need, and so we'll go through that. I am going to present up until we deal with the clause by clause, and then I'm going to hand over to Ms. McCourt to take us through the actual clause by clause changes. Okay, I think that by way of introduction, maybe what I should do to take us right back to the beginning. In amending NEMA, Chapter 5 of NEMA, we were trying to put in place a set of more, enable a set of more strategic approaches that would allow a greater set of instruments to be introduced into the environmental impact management system in South Africa. We were trying to be able to build the enabling base for an approach that goes beyond EIAs. And we were trying to address issues also of efficiency and effectiveness in the system. So, and I really think that we did go through that in detail. So there were definitional changes and then the tools other than EIA. In terms of more of the detail on that, we had improved provisions for cooperative governance. And you will remember there's a lot around alignment both with within the environmental family around the other Environmental Management Acts, the provision to link and streamline authorizations, as well as the provisions to do it with other departments and organs of state. Then there were new provisions for the integration and alignment of the regulatory process, strengthening the ability to use spatial tools, and new provisions for management, including exclusions based on norms and standards and provisions based for the development or adoption of new or existing norms and standards as the basis for doing EIAs. And then there were issues around exemption provisions and putting in checks and balances in that regard and getting alignment with the provision of Administrative Justice Act. So That is what was in the original B36 that was presented to the Portfolio Committee. It was introduced in Parliament in July. It was certified in August by the Chief State Law Advisor. There were public hearings in September. After the public hearings, the Department briefed the PC on the amendments, including a clause-by-clause ruling in early November, in which we looked at the comments that had been made by the public. During that final briefing, principle in support was obtained to the bulk of the amendments, subject to amendments. Annexure C contains those amendments. There were editorial corrections. The most important one was moving public participation from discretionary to compulsory requirements as a result of the comments made in the public participation. We amended the wording of 244B, which is around discretionary environments, to be more prescriptive. To consider issues of applicability. And then we made an amendment to section 24G, which covers periods when processes will not be covered. So those were the amendments that were voted on by the Portfolio Committee. I don't think it was a formal, it was a clause by clause, and those amendments were put in, but I presume there must then be a further formal process, but that was where we got to. At that point, we stopped the process. The process was stopped because the Portfolio Committee was not satisfied with the issue, the way the issue of mining was dealt with. And the Portfolio Committee decided to take it up in Parliament, and simultaneously there were interactions between the Minister of Mineral and Energy Affairs, the Minister of Environmental Affairs and Tourism, and the Deputy President that then resulted in a further sets of discussions. Okay, we now then get on to environmental management and mining. Now, and I think here what we're doing is to, because I think it's important to understand what the limits and the limits and space is for the work of this committee. Essentially, in 2002, the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Act was promulgated. Parliament assigns a mandate for inter alia environmental management associated with mining to the Minister of Mineral and Energy Affairs with that legislation. Accordingly, environmental impact management and EIAs or EMPs for mining activities are currently done in a legal framework that is regulated through the MPRTA, while EIAs for all other activities are done through NEMA. And the MPRDA prescribes an EIA process that must be followed before prospecting, mining, and reconnaissance-related authorizations are granted, but that is done by DME under their legislation. Secondly, in terms of NEMA, the listing of activities to be subjected to an EIA can only be done in consultation with the ministers that hold jurisdiction in terms of that activity. And when, for example, we've regulated, identified the set of water-related activities that are to be listed for EIA, that list has been agreed to by the Minister of Water Affairs and Forestry. Similarly, the identification of the road-related EIAs, that activities that are going to be done have been done in agreement with the Minister of Transport. So there has to be that concurrence. After a long negotiating process, and I mean we're now talking about a negotiating process that went from around, I think, 2000, that happened in 2003, the Minister of Mineral and Energy Affairs agreed to the listing of mining in the NEMA EIA, subject to conditionally, including retaining the mandate given by the MPRDA and the prevention of duplication of regulatory requirements. So there was an in-principle agreement. And when we passed the July 2006 EIA regulations, you will see in those regulations mining is listed. But it's listed as an activity that will come into effect on a date to be determined. Now, those conditions couldn't be met in the current legislative framework. And basically, where the process stalled was in the inability between 2003 and 2006, 2007, there was an inability of the two departments to agree
on what changes would, how that would then be implemented. So we've, since 2006, mining has been listed, but it hasn't been subject to EIA, and it is still regulated by the NPRDA. And there's been a very long set of interchanges between the two departments in an attempt to find a resolution to this issue. Now, the NPRDA and its provisions contain similarities to the NEMA system, but there are key differences. Firstly, an environmental authorization is not required. Reports are approved and conditions included in the mining right, and you then get a permit or a permission. There is a public participation process that, in the view of our department and in comparison to the NEMA process, is lacking in rigor. And appeal, the appeal is linked to the mining rights and mining permits and mining permission, and that makes things very difficult because clearly if you have a social plan that has been approved and you have a geotechnical thing that has been approved and you have a whole lot of water license for a potential mine and then you come with the EIA becomes one of a number of things and then it kind of lacks the force that it has if it's something in its own right. Now, at the moment, in terms of administration, mining is subject to EIAs in terms of the NPRDA, and DME is the competent authority. It's not part of the NEMA EIA regime. And you will remember that in the public hearings, a lot of organizations came and complained about mining authorizations and the environment, but essentially what the circumstances is that none of that, this department and NEMA have no place, have no part in addressing any of those issues at this time. And DEET has no powers in relation to EIAs and environmental management of mining, apart from the mining proposed in areas protected by the National Environmental Management Protected Areas Act, which has got a clause that limits the way that mining can or can't happen in protected areas. DEET and the provinces in terms of administration are commenting authorities, and if there's an application, DME will send it to the provinces or to DEET, and DEET or the provinces in the same way as anyone else can comment on it, and if we don't like, if we have a problem on environmental grounds with a particular application, we can comment. And the minister has the power to either uphold or to overrule our objection. Okay? Now, in relation to this, there's been a lot of interaction between the ministers over the years. And the ministers have agreed that it's not desirable that there are different environmental management systems for different activities, and it's created all kinds of difficulties and confusions. And accordingly, it's been agreed that there should be one system and that this system should be prescribed by the environmental authority. So I think that was the one important in-principle decision. Secondly, the Minister of Mineral and Energy Affairs was clear that her existing environmental mandate for mining needs to be recognized and retained. In other words, that she does have a responsibility for mining in terms of existing law. And thirdly, the Minister of Environmental Affairs and Tourism, as the custodian of the environment, must be enabled to function, to fulfill this function also in terms of mining. So we're sitting with a situation, and I mean, you will know that one committee, or if you've got a law, you can only change that law by agreement. So we can't now in this committee say, well, we don't like what's in that law, so we're now going to change it. You have to get that agreement. And often getting those agreements are very complicated. So until there's agreement between between essentially, I suppose, the ministers and the two parliamentary committees as to what to happen, the status quo remains. In terms of the proposed solution, there are various legs to it, and I just want to go into it, and the next six slides deal with what the solution is. Firstly, the in-principle agreement by the ministers is that there is one system that should be prescribed by NEMA. So NEMA will regulate environmental impact management of all listed activities in the country, including mining. The Minister of Mineral and Energies will retain its mandate as a designated competent authority to implement the system related to mining. So what that means is, in the same way as the provincial MECs our competent authorities to implement the system for EIAs that happen in their provinces, the Minister of Mineral and Energy Affairs will retain that mandate to be the competent authority to ensure the implementation of the system related to mining. The Minister of Environmental Affairs and Tourism is instated as an appeal authority in mining environmental management, and that enables him to exercise his function as custodian, in addition to the fact that the actual regulatory framework for managing the environmental impacts of mining are set out in NEMA, and in the same way as we set out the national norms and standards, the guidelines, the systems, the procedures for all EIAs in the country, we would do that for the mining EIAs as well. The proposals to give effect to the that was the in-principle agreement. The departments were then told to go away and to implement, and the suggestions around implementation are the following. Firstly, that the MPRTA will be amended by repealing all provisions related to environmental management. So anything related to environmental management goes out of the MPRTA. The making or granting of prospective mining or reconnaissance is subject to environmental authorizations. It becomes one of the granting conditions that there is a positive ROD, so the status of the ROD then becomes elevated. Then NEMA will be further amended. So that's what needs to happen to the MPRTA, the amendments that will happen. So huge amount chunks of text and clauses are going to go out of the MPRTA and come into NEMA. Then NEMA needs to be further amended by the inclusion of the environmental management of provisions of the MPRDA that are currently not adequately covered by NEMA. So, for example, there's issues in the current mining legislation that deal with financial provisions for the rehabilitation of mine dumps, and that deal with how rehabilitation and mine closure must happen that aren't in NEMA at the moment, and they're quite specific. So those sections of the MPRTA need to be brought over into NEMA. And then we allow for a combination of applications in terms of keeping a streamlined process. And then finally, what DME has insisted upon is accommodating stricter timeframes for mining-related processes, because in law, all of the other authorizations in relation to mining go through particular timeframes, and as part of it, it was the one part of it that they wanted kept in terms of those timeframes, and we've looked at how we address that. The result is that environmental management is only regulated by NEMA. So there's quite a lot that then comes into NEMA. Then in terms of the competent authority, we will further amend NEMA. And this was already, I mean, there was a formulation that was already in the original B36, which is the point at which we stopped, which we want to, we've made text for assigning competence to the Minister of Mineral and Energy Affairs for the implementation of the environmental management system. The Minister of Mineral Energy can't regulate environmental management, develop policy or guidelines or norms and standards that must implement this, and would have effectively the same then powers in relation to the provincial MECs. And the result is environmental management is regulated by NEMA, but for mining implemented by DME. In terms of the appeal authority, we'll assign the Minister of Environmental Affairs and Tourism the appeal authority for all environmental authorizations issued for mining-related activities, so you get that separation of powers. You don't have the person, because in the way the EIA system works, you get the ROD is signed by the Director General or a delegate of is delegated by the Director General. And then the Minister, who has not been part of the process, rules on appeal. So you have a separation, administrative separation. In mining, the minister up front grants all of the permission, so there isn't any separation if you keep it as part of that system, which is why the appeal authority... Record of decision, the permit. The environmental authorization.
ROD.
Yeah, record of decision.
Record of decision.
Yeah, okay. Then in terms of the transition, it's proposed that the transition from the MPRDA system to the NEMA system take place within 18 months of the enactment of either of either bill. And because they are a set of, they basically are going to need, there's going to be need to be a new system put in place in DME. They're going to need to implement the EIA system, and they're going to need to train people and put in place new procedures and new administrative systems, and probably do, I think that we're going to have to do some quite substantial training of the current DME officials in order that they can implement our system, and then also look at where we're going to need to put in place new policies and guidelines related to mining in order to make that, to guide the way that they implement the system for mining. And then, as I understand it, and Chair, I don't know if I'm going beyond what the department does at this point, but my understanding is that there's been a discussion in Parliament that within a further period that the entire system should go over to DEEP, but that would take some years for that to happen. But, yeah. So given all of this, there's then the textual amendment, and we then go into the clause by clause. Chair, I wonder whether you wouldn't want to take general discussion and questions of clarity or comments at this point, and then we go on to the clause by clause from here. Okay. So shall we carry on? We've done the first 10 pages then of this presentation, the first 20 slides, yeah. Because now we go into the actual, beyond here, the rest of this presentation is the actual text. And I might stop here in a second.
Okay. Our fundamental disagreement was that we felt that it is not correct for us to continue to make this concession around the mining sector regulating itself in regard to environmental issues. We felt that that's not correct in principle and that we should proceed with it. And we felt that if the one reason why this status quo is being maintained has to do with capacity, that there was a simplistic solution that we had, that we could have moved the same unit in DME and move it to environment and ensure that those people can just implement it. But of course, there was not immediate agreement on that point. What we ultimately agreed upon was that after we adopted all these amendments and agreed on the final form of the legislation, we will then have a report of this process, which will be a record of Parliament. So we will adopt a report, a similar report that will also be adopted by the colleagues in the Mining Portfolio Committee, which will indicate very clearly that over the next 3 years, there's a joint commitment by the two departments to move all manner of environmental management into the Department of Environmental Affairs Authority. That this is a record of Parliament, and that there will be a concrete process, which we hope that pretty soon will be spelled out by the Joint Department on how they are going to work through this process of the transference of this responsibility to Environmental Affairs Authority. So that's basically the kind of agreement that we've reached with the portfolio committee, with the participation also of people from the executive. So that's basically what we are. At this stage, I'll open up for general comments, and then we'll go to the textual dimension. But note, Honorable Mkwena, Kalako, and Manduli.
No, Chairperson, thanks very much. Your opening remarks have crystallized the position very, very well. Because one doesn't have to go into the past, as in the history of this bill here. What cannot be compromised is the fact that matters of environment, in this case here, reside with DIT. And that should have the principle that must have universal application. But then from history, we know that the mining people have been basically alone to themselves doing everything because the referendum played, et cetera, et cetera. So when it came out this law, they reacted that no. NIMBY syndrome, not in my backyard. EIA must apply everywhere, but not here. We said, no, that's not correct. We're a constitutional state, and the law must apply universally, right, in the Council of Africa, right. The compromise that has been adequately summed up by the chairperson, I support completely, because it carries with it all the elements of constitutionality, and the fact, the proviso that this law will have to be amended in any case. So it's a compromise which is pragmatic now. But the point I'm raising now, chairperson, is this. We as a personal committee must have sight of the text of the bill of the MPRTA. In other words, as we, before we pass this law, we must make sure that the bill of this MPRTA from the site says exactly what, read the same way as ours, textually, so that there should be no further contradictions, that we carry on the intellectual understanding that, okay, everything is fine, we pass the number amendment, and then lo and behold, they pass something slightly different, because then conflict will arise, then there will be litigation, we'll find ourselves on the stoop of the Constitutional Court, and it will be embarrassing for ourselves to be cited as witnesses to support those that will actually show the conflict. It will be embarrassing for us. So I would say that now the safeguard is that DME must give us the actual text of the amendment of their bill so that we must make sure that it is in sync with ours.
Yeah, mine is just a comment. As you will know, I was not that much involved throughout the process because I was involved in the other committees. You see, my just to raise a problem, Chair, which I think which have been confronting us ever since 1994 around environmental issues, especially around mining. I hope the amendments which are done now with this period of a transition, making sure everything which is around the environment comes to the Department of Environment. I hope these amendments will be able to take the mining sector into task. Because what's happening now, if you go to Northern Cape, and all these areas which are predominantly mining areas. These mining companies, they damaged the environment with all what they are doing and those mine dumps precisely because DME have no capacity, we must be honest, to actually monitor and even make sure that they clean up and they pay for that cleanup. They just pack and go to DRC and leave the mine there, even with an absolute equipment there. They will say, no, look, we have gone, we're not in South Africa. And we must know that those people have experts in every field, and they scrutinize the law. So I think this sort of a compromise in looking into how can we as a government, in fact, especially now, will have to quickly move to a situation where everything regards the environment resides in one department, so that there's no confusion. I think maybe that will be the subject of the next parliament when we come back. But that's my worry at the moment, because if you go to these areas, all these mining companies, because there's no enforcement in the DME, they have no staff, in fact, dealing with that. Even if issues are raised by communities in those areas, it takes donkey's years within DME to deal with them around the environment. So I wanted just to that's my concern, Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Because at least what has been presented by Joel, at least it does address the concern that we had last year. The only part that is left now is between the two departments. You see, Jefferson, I'm still having a problem. With due respect to what you, the information that you gave us as to what we deliberated on with the DME colleagues. But, Jefferson, my concern is that the mining sector is going to recognize a little bit the EIA, but retaining the mandate of the MPRDA as well. Now, to me, here it's as if it will depend as to which suits them today. If the MPRDA suits them better today, they'll stick on it. That means tomorrow, if the EIA are suiting them, oh, they go along with it. You see, there's a lot, as Commissioner was saying, there's a lot that is being done by this mining sector to the environment. That means in the long run, we are going to be living in the endangered environment through this mining sector. If you look back to what happened in Johannesburg, one of the last year, whereby a committee member just get into those things. And, I think in a way we are not maybe trying to jeopardize the economy of the country, but we are trying to balance the two. Development plus environment on the other hand. Now, if really what has been presented by Joe and some of the things that it was our concern, but I think here the stumbling block is DME, of which no one in this room can validation of the DME. I think a lot should be done. To me, that 3 years is a long period. That's my comment. That's my concern, Chairperson. As I said, I'm just making a few comments. But a lot of work has been done here. It's just for us, for the two departments, to take decisive decisions. Because you see here, it is clear who is the custodian of the environment. But on the other hand, one doesn't want to lose the power. So if really we can think of the environment more than the power here, I think we can go forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I must say that the last few weeks they've been a hard time, and particularly for our chairperson, I think, because the two departments and the two committees are coming to the table with very, very different mindsets, and both have had to compromise, and both have compromised. DME view the whole issue of environmental care and protection clearly as based fundamentally as a nuisance, because what they are about is profit and getting whatever is in the ground out of the ground as quickly and effectively and brutally as it possibly can, and it's not part of their thinking and their mindset. It's a fundamental contradiction to expect them to take care and to look at things with the principle of environmental appropriate management in mind. But they have compromised, and they quite substantially so, as have Beach and ourselves. But just the point I would really like to make is that we saw these amendments now when we walked into this room, and I doubt if DME, the Portfolio Committee on Mineral and Energy, have seen them yet. We've never sat down and looked at the MPRDA. At the new mining and energy bill. We've never sat down and compared clause by clause exactly what it means to the environment, what it means to people out there, what it means to the citizens of South Africa. The citizens of South Africa have not seen them yet. And I think that is an absolute, quite fundamental as far as the Constitution is concerned, I don't think it's the appropriate way to do things at all. And I think that there should be more time given, and I think however long, if it takes us coming back in a couple of weeks' time, but I think the greatest South Africans who are showing a huge interest in this particular bit of legislation have the right to know and to see and to understand and to debate what these amendments do mean. And maybe there are very good reasons why the Minister of Mineral and Energy needs to be a competent authority. But South Africa needs to understand what those reasons are. And if they are the fact that they're just officials do not exist indeed, to be able to have the capacity and the numbers and the experience to have an understanding of environmental affairs as far as the mining is concerned, then DEET needs to boost up its capacity. But of course, I still don't quite understand why the environmental officers in DME cannot be transferred over to, which was in quite a serious letter that our chairperson wrote on that very issue. So now we are saying, and it's just coming from our committee, that, okay, 3 years in order for them to boost up their capacity. But as Honourable Mokoena has said, it's just a piece of paper. There's nothing written into law or into regulation that 3 years it will be passed in Parliament. But it will have no, as I understand it, no standing in law to hold either department to that rather shaky promise that it, that, or demand on our part, that that will happen. And I must say, I have quite serious misgivings. I appreciate compromise has been made on both sides, and I appreciate that both departments and ourselves have worked very hard to get it as far as it is now. And that certainly it's a huge improvement on what has existed up to now. But I just feel that there should be time should be given for public participation in these new amendments, and I just need to get some sort of understanding how the Department of Mineral and Energy and DEEC will be held to that 3-year agreement.
State law advisors are legal people here. They should comment on the weight of our, of the report. Okay. I think that's about it.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. I think that just to talk a little bit, to start off, I'm not going to answer the questions necessarily in the order in which they were raised, but just to talk about what the shift is going to mean. I think the one thing is that once the environmental management of mining is regulated by NEMA, then all the other provisions of NEMA apply, including the enforcement provisions of NEMA. So in the same way as we have gone out and systematically inspected the steel and ferroalloy industry in order to get environmental improvements, our EMIs would be able to, our environmental management inspectors would be able to address mining in a much more systematic way. And at the moment under the MPRDA, you just don't have those enforcement provisions at all relating to mining. So basically what it would do is it would also bring mining into the ambit of overall environmental enforcement, which I think is something that is very important for all of us. In relation to timing in the MPRDA, our proposal, and it's something that we're going to need to draft, is that I'm not 100% certain, but my understanding is that there are contentious issues in the other NPRDA amendments. For example, this issue around mining royalties is a big and contentious issue, and that the timing of the two bills is not completely aligned. Our suggestion is that effectively that in a schedule to this bill, that we amend the MPRDA to take all the mining-related provisions out and put it into NEMA. So you don't have to wait for the MPRDA bill to be passed before those repeals happen, before those sections get repealed in the MPRDA and put into NEMA. And you can do it through a schedule to this bill, and I'm quite certain that DME would have no problems with that happening, because I think otherwise one is going to be, this committee's timeframes are going to be held hostage to a set of other timeframes, and there are very big risks around timeframes. So I think that would be the guarantee, is that that would happen. I think it's a very good idea to have an opportunity to go through and look at the MPRDA itself and look at what the impact of this on the MPRDA would be, these proposals. I think that there are things in the MPRDA actually in relation to mining that go beyond what is in NEMA, and that we think that will add quite some weight to NEMA, and that in due course should maybe be extended beyond mining. And those are things in particular relating to the provisions in the MPRDA around rehabilitation. The financial provisions for closure and rehabilitation are much more substantial than anything that we've got in NEMA. And we believe really that's going to be something that that Minerals has done that is extremely positive, that within NEMA could be a very important thing to have. So, I mean, I think we must really be clear that one can argue about how the MPRDA provisions on environment have or haven't been implemented and whether it's correct that they are where they are. But in law, there are things in that legislation that we think will really add in a very positive way to our environmental legislation if we put them into NEMA. Secondly, I think that So, in other words, maybe just in relation to repealing the sections in NEMA and putting them in the MPRTA and putting them into NEMA, there's no pick or choosing. The only law that will regulate the environmental management of mining will be NEMA. So, the minerals officials in DME will issue EIAs for mining, but the law that they do it is in NEMA, and you can't say, well, we'll now do this in charge from the MPRDA and we'll do that from NEMA, because everything relating to environment goes out of the MPRDA completely. So the pick and choose is not a problem. There's a system that is set within NEMA. In terms of the timeframes, I mean, this has been, as we all know, a very complicated, exhausting, stressful and difficult process to get to the point where we've now got. It's been difficult at an official level. It has taken time at a ministerial and political level. It, I think, for Parliament has been something that has required some major amount of time and effort to try and get agreed. As a result, as I understand it, we are now at the point in the parliamentary calendar where if we can't process this, it isn't going to happen. Or at least if it doesn't happen, my understanding is the 9th of May is the last date for a reading in the National Assembly in order for it to go to the NCOP, because otherwise essentially what is going to happen is that it's going to stand over until after the election. And in that case, with a new government, a new possibly new ministers, possibly new committees, we will effectively start from scratch. So my personal anxiety is I think that this is not perfect. And as the chair said, I think that in any negotiation there is give and take, we would have liked some things to be different. But given the fact that we are negotiating from the starting point that the DME has the law and their consent is required to do anything to it, we have, I think, reached an agreement, and I think the two departments have actually worked very well and very hard together in order to get to something that is meaningful and practical, and that that really does each side give to the other what is required. So I think that just to state from our I've worked for DEET for 4 years and for the province for 7 years before that, and I think that for 10 of those years this has been a debate. And something that has been hanging and that hasn't really moved. And I think that really it would be a great pity if we were to leave it, have to leave it until June or July or August next year under a new set of circumstances where we really do start from scratch again. So I'm hoping, I understand the issues around public comment and public participation. And I know that there has been some discussion about maybe scheduling an additional session to try and give a little bit more time for consideration. But you know, Parliament is on a 5 minutes to midnight schedule, and I'm not certain how the chair would manage that. It's not anything inside the control of the department. Lastly, I think that on the issues of DME implementation and officials, I think the reality is that, as we know, we've made great strides in the management of the EIA system. And the way we've done it is through a lot of training and through the development of a whole set of policies and guidelines and systems that create certainty in the process and that effectively start to get us to a point where someone can come in and can implement a system. They're not developing the system. There's fairly very clear-cut parameters within officials are working. Having said that, we do have a very big capacity problem. It's not only a DME capacity problem. It's also a DEET capacity problem and a provincial capacity problem. It's also a problem of the fact that we don't necessarily have sufficient budget. It's a problem of the fact that the private sector and the parastatals and the municipalities are paying a lot more than we do and that we lose people all the time. So I think that really the implementation, there's a set of endemic problems around the implementation and management of the environmental system in government and a set of personnel problems that we confront on an ongoing basis. And between the two departments, I mean, one has to kind of live with the situation until there's major changes. We have to really just do our best to be able to put in place law and systems that are robust enough that we can then manage around the capacity things. Our sense is bringing minerals, mining EIAs into that family is going to ensure we think a much better level of performance across the country over time. On the time frame, the 3-year time frame, I really think that is something that has been discussed in Parliament and would need to then, I'm not certain how, I can't really answer that question. So thank you very much, Chair.
The issue of the schedule,
what I'm saying is that there are two ways of affecting these amendments. The one thing would be that NEMA gets passed in the MPRDA. NEMA is, there's this version of NEMA and then there's a new version of the MPRDA with all of the things that have been deleted. All of the things that are going into NEMA deleted in the MPRDA and they get passed at the same time and then they take effect so that you then effectively are handing things out of the one into the other. The other way to do it is that we have a schedule to NEMA that repeals those sections of the MPRDA that need to be repealed. So in other words, you would not have to wait for the one to see what is in the one to do it with the other. What you would need to do is that you would repeal those sections with a schedule by means of a schedule to NEMA. And that is something that by agreement can and is done as a matter of course. So it's it is something that exists. It's a tool that exists within the menu of lawmaking that can be used, and it will effectively achieve this without and de-link the time frames of the two processes from each other.
Chairperson, I think the DG has tried to answer my question, but I think that is a half measure. We mustn't complicate this issue. We come a long way with it. My suggestion is a very simple one. Get the text of the MPRDA here. Look at it and also give them our text. We just stop. Say, DME, this is now the latest version of the bill want to pass. And give us yours. Do cross-reference in that, because I'm avoiding a situation where there will be contradiction, where we'll be bullish to put our bill to the parliamentary system. We vote for it, et cetera, because we're trying to beat the deadline, et cetera, and that's the one hand. The left hand also does the same thing. And there were two bills that are all trying to achieve the same objective of being passed through the same parliamentary session. But then come 2009, out will emerge two contradictory bills. And people are going to say, same parliament, under pressure, the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing. There was a general understanding that the two will carry a compromise. But the product is going to be a camel and not a horse.
Okay.
Just a clarity on the ROD. When does this ROD come in? Is it maybe before the judicial list touch the ground, or is it in between that stage whereby the second application for the mining license? Where does they come in? I'm seeing this. In the near future may be causing those problems. If they've already touched the ground and they know what is in there, maybe it will be in and out of the court now. You know, when they are coming, just that clarity.
Okay, honorable.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, my apologies. I was caught in the biggest traffic jam of my life today. Two things. One, and I apologize if this has been discussed, and that is with regards to the beyond NEMA principles being applied to DME, with regard to the ultimate transfer of competent authority for mines to the Minister of Environment. Because if you have discussed it, I mean, I'm not aware of it from the committee. I'm only aware of it from corridor talk. Is that something that is going to be legislated for specifically, or is it a gentleman's agreement between the ministers at that stage? If it is something that, if it is only a gentleman's agreement, is it not possible that it can be legislated for under transitional arrangements where you actually put a time frame into the bill and say that that in fact even the competent authority is, for example, for mines is in existence for X period of time, and then it reverts to the Minister of Environmental Affairs and Tourism, for the exact reason that Ms. Yawich says of, you know, they may be changing priorities and principles, and I think you know, we may not get the ball back as quickly as we had hoped. That was the one issue I wanted to talk about. The second one is actually related to that, and I'll tell you why I'm worried about it. I accept that the NEMA principles are a significant improvement, and why I'm quite anxious for the transition to happen nevertheless. And the DDG has painted a picture of capacity problems on both sides anyway, and I certainly remain of the view that we should move them all over to the one entity. And that's particularly because the majority, you know, this is an opinion of mine, but it's certainly something I've canvassed quite extensively, that the vast majority of mining applications for the next 30 years are very likely to be actually granted in the next 3 years, particularly with regards to coal mining operations. So this bill comes at a very complex time in our history, in fact. One, because we're dealing with inevitably the transition between MPRDA and NEMA with regards to the actual regulations. It comes at a critical time. It's an improvement I accept. But two, the ultimate authority returning to DEET all falls within this period now where the majority of mining applications, because of the long-term nature of the these rights which are granted to mining operations, are in fact going to be given now in the next few years. And DEET as an entity is going to be, you know, when and if it ultimately gets it, is going to be left with the legacy of those operations. And the question, I mean, I suspect the logical answer from DEET will be, well, that shouldn't be a problem because NEMA principles will be applied. But I still think we have the inevitable consequences of conflict between national DME, which doesn't have provincial competencies. It has provincial offices, but it doesn't actually have specific provincial competencies, and provincial departments of conservation, which do the vast majority of environmental assessment, of environmental authorizations in South Africa. And so the competition on what is appropriate land use is not going to actually dissipate in any way going forward. And the two entities are still going to find themselves in conflict, as they do particularly in Mpumalanga and certainly in the Western Cape. So to summarize, the kind of making it an inevitability by law that the transfer in fact happens beyond the actual just change of MPRDA to NEMA regulations is something that I feel quite strongly about. And if it can be actually written into transitional arrangements in a bill, I think that that would strengthen this bill. And I say that in the context of this particular timing where we are in South Africa, that of likelihood, and people can debate me on this, that the vast majority of mining applications for the next 30 years will be granted in the next three.
about or links towards Honorable Morgan is raising is whether would the instrument of the statute not be used to effect this commitment to a transition? Could the statute not be used for that? Okay, parliamentary legal person is here. What would be the meaning of the report on the situation? If you come with a report that indicates the transition as well, what weight will that report have?
Thank you, Chair, honourable members. I think the first thing to say is to understand the current process for mining leading to a mining right and what will be introduced if these amendments are passed. The current process is there is an application for a mining right or a mining permission. As part of that process, a whole lot of things must be done. One of the things that must be done is the development of an environmental management program, which is informed by an EIA process. That is developed. There's also a mine health and safety plan developed. There is a whole lot of things that are developed. All of these different things currently are approved, but they don't have a status. So an EMPR is approved, but it's not an authorization. So it's not an environmental authorization or a record of decision. It's something that must be approved before the mining right can be granted. So the only authorization in the current process is the granting of the mining rights, exploration permission, etc., and that can currently be appealed to the Minister of Minerals and Energy. If we change the regime as we propose, all of those things will still happen, but the EMPR process will be replaced by an entire environmental impact assessment process, resulting in an environmental authorization. In other words, before the Minister of Minerals and Energy can grant a mining right, there is an environmental authorization which can be appealed, and that appeal is to the Minister of Environmental Affairs and Tourism. So there is an authorization now built in, an environmental authorization, not an approval of a document, an authorization built in that is a precondition for the granting of a right. And both the granting of the right can be appealed, but that's to the Minister of Minerals and Energy. The environmental authorization can be appealed, and that is appealed to the Minister of Environmental Affairs and Tourism. So we kind of have, to get to Honourable Morgan's question, if we get this in now, for this 3 years then leading to the transfer, we would at least have the appeal as the veto for environmental authorizations gone wrong. You understand what I'm saying. So if even if the whole function is not transferred to us, if there is substantial environmental grounds that were not considered during the environmental authorization, an interested and affected party can appeal the environmental authorization. If the Minister of Environmental Affairs and Tourism then upheld the appeal, the environmental authorization fall away, and subsequently the mining right cannot be granted. So that's the consequential implication of getting a custodianship in this process. So it's quite substantial in that regard that we have an environmental authorization that must be granted before you can issue a mining right. Currently we have a plan that must be approved before you can grant grant a mining right.
Comment on your question and on the issue of timeframes. I think it's important to understand that we're talking about two sets of timeframes here. What has been agreed between the two ministers was an 18-month transition for what is in this bill to be put into effect. And I think that in the wording of that transitional thing, we might need to look at it and say, look at there is wording linked to the Constitution that is saying that if within a certain period the bill isn't passed, then it will nevertheless come into effect. But we can find a way around that quite easily. In case they don't get the MPR DA through, you don't want this to be sitting in limbo. So I think we can sort that out. There's then a three-year time frame that was discussed in Parliament around the complete transfer of the function. That is not, as I understand it, a formal agreement between the two departments, and I think Parliament is going to, not for us to respond to that, because it was an agreement, a discussion within Parliament, and then I think that we will take, obviously, whatever instructions or decision that Parliament makes on that one. So what we did is we looked at the administrative issues. We looked at the fact that you don't have an EIA system for mining. We looked at the fact that you're going to need to train people in the implementation of a new law and a new system and a new way of doing things and a new public participation and writing of authorizations that are much tighter than what might be written at the moment, and a whole lot of those kinds of things, as well as the integration of that into the functioning of what is becoming quite a tight system, very tight coordination between DEET and the provinces. And we said, how long is it going to take us to be able to get that system up and running? And then we discussed it with GME as well, and in that negotiation, there was that 18-month transition that was agreed. So I'm going to kind of throw that ball to the chair on the 3 months. I think that the agreement then between the two ministers is an agreement that, in terms of there is a written agreement that is being prepared that is enforceable in terms of the Intergovernmental Relations Act. So it isn't a gentleman's agreement. I mean, effectively, we are going ahead. I mean, the only reason that we've got these amendments here today is because these amendments, the proposals have been agreed by both departments in terms of it hasn't been reduced to writing, it is in the process of being done, but the Intergovernmental Relations Act, it's a formal agreement in terms of the Intergovernmental Relations Act, and the minute that this goes into the parliamentary process, it implements that agreement. And one could, I presume, also maybe in terms of the three-year process, also do a similar kind of agreement in terms of that would have similar standing, but I think the parliamentary legal advisor and the state law advisor would need to engage on that. But just to say, this is a very there's nothing discretionary about what is being proposed at all. It very, very fundamentally changes law, and therefore all of the consequences that flow from the implementation of that law.
With due respect, Chairperson, I disagree with the GDG. The state president is going to sign a particular law. He's not going to sign an interdepartmental agreement. That's the whole point. He's going to have the Lima Amendment Bill put to him, and then he's going to sign it. Right? He's going to have another law, the MPRDA put him to sign it. He's not going to sign an interministerial agreement. That's the crux of the matter. We are lawmakers here. So we cannot dodge that issue. What is difficulty in getting the version of MDF3 and ours? Just to make sure that now they're the same. Instead of saying, oh, no, the ministers have agreed in the corridor of parliament, let's carry on. And then we've got two contradictory. I mustn't repeat myself. The president procedurally is going to sign two bills, and they must be harmonious with each other. He's not going to sign the agreement by Minister Pascal Bay and he's not going to sign that. That's the crux of the matter. We are not saying we are looking at something perfect. We are saying this imperfect agreement must appear on both bills. That's all we're saying. We're not saying some Rolls Royce must match. We must say this imperfect agreement, let me come here, imperfect agreement one, and two, to make sure that it's the same imperfect version. That's what we're saying.
Thank you, Chair. I think for me, where this whole matter turns is we have to be focused on two points. What we're dealing with here is a very, I think, complicated issue lying between two departments, essentially, because that's where legislation emanates. We have mining, which falls under a different executive competence, and environmental law, which falls under a different executive competence. And then we have Parliament and this portfolio committee, which now finds itself in the legislative process. Essentially, in trying to merge these functions of where it lies, we have to ask ourselves, as this committee, to what extent can we actually make this legislation work without encroaching on any executive function. Now, listening to the debate, what we have is we have an agreement at an executive level, and we have to ask ourselves, how does that filter into the legislative process? How does that give us impetus to take this matter forward? The first question my chair raised was reporting to the House. As a portfolio committee reporting to the NA, we have to ask ourselves, I think, two questions. What is the purpose of that report? Would it assist us in an oversight function? Or would it give us any leverage for enforceability of what we're trying to achieve? My view is that, firstly, a report of that nature would not achieve what this committee is trying to set out. It would be beyond the jurisdiction, I think, of a portfolio committee to prescribe or to report to the National Assembly on how the executive should be cooperating. I think that, in my mind, would be beyond the scope of the legislature to the executive, taking into account separation of powers. That does not say that the committee cannot report on issues, but the extent of that reporting, I don't think, is going to bring about the desired effect. I've listened to the one comment of the schedule effect of the repeals. As well, I think it was Honourable Morgan who raised the issues of transitional arrangements. In my mind, I think both bring about the desired effect. What we do not want to achieve in the parliamentary process is two committees, two portfolio committees running two sections of law, two pieces of legislation, achieve both with the same goal, running particularly left hand, right hand, not knowing. And I think at this point it's a collaboration exercise between the portfolio committees. And I think the DGD was right. In the legislative process, you do have a menu to choose from. And at this point, it's what is going to be, particularly because we do have time constraints, what is going to be the most effective way and efficient way of achieving that. The schedule would, in my mind, be a good tool to do that, to repeal whatever is in legislation within the jurisdiction of the mining department. But also, the transitional arrangements will be a nice, clean way of actually taking the agreements into legislative enforceability. The transitional arrangements will possibly be in operation for a certain period of time. It's not something that's going to have 10 years for life. It will then be operative to say once this is achieved, once that is achieved, once legislation has been merged, once two ministers have done whatever we put into transitional arrangements, which emanate from an executive agreement, that can be done. That's within the legislative competence of this committee to legislate on. Just on the issue of an agreement also that falls within the intergovernmental relations framework, I agree with the DDG. It would have impetus in that respect. That's exactly what that legislation is aimed to do. But we need to ask ourselves, as the legislature, would we have any grounds to go in and enforce that agreement? And there, I would say, that would possibly come into an oversight function. And that is as far as the teeth of this committee would be able to go. But placing it in a transitional arrangement with these amendments would give us more, a greater extent of legal compliance to ensure that there would be nothing wrong with putting whatever is in the agreement between the two ministers in legislation. Parliament has the right to do so by the Constitution. It has the legislative power to do so. But that ultimately is for this committee members to decide on which route they're going to take. But nothing is legally unpalatable at this point in time. But it's really for the committee members to decide which instrument they are going to be choosing in this menu.
I think that, I mean, hold it. Oh. Okay, I'm saying we think that, I mean, there is a menu in terms of what we could get to in terms of what we desire, but I think if this committee wants to look at the text as it is, seemingly argued by the Honourable Member Mgwena, I would think it's in your discretion to then have a joint sitting with the DME committee and then and look at the text as to whether they bring their text forward or whether you then consider our text that we have worked on with their input, just to ensure that you have some level of agreement and comfort as a committee. I think that's something that you can pursue if your program would allow for. Because in our opinion, I think DME will not, they cannot bypass the full process. They still have to engage in a whole process before they actually make their own amendment. And we are not responsible for their schedule in that regard, but would want to have provisions that would take effect in, as soon as possible as a department in regard with the NEMA amendment.
Just to add to what the DG is saying, there is the added advantage that the state law advisors are also involved in the process. So Honorable McQuinn's concern is that we have two pieces of legislation that might contradict each other. The additional safeguard is the state law advisors who ensure that this doesn't happen at this, and that the legislation actually talks. The preceding legislation talks to the succeeding legislation. So just to add to that concern.
Okay. Honorable Mkwena and Honorable Mugabe. Yeah. Transition arrangements do not mean water and paraffin. You can't put water and paraffin together and say, because of God, they're all liquids. Fine. Then that will take care of transfer. You cannot do that. I think you accommodated me a great deal when you said that, you see, it's not deed that has got pressure of time. It's also the DME people. Both committee were first time. Now, to relieve that pressure, it's very easy. It's a question of 15 minutes exercise. Because the ministers have agreed, there's no contestation. We're not trying to get anything out. And we've all worked very hard, and we're not imposing an extra burden on the department. We're not saying you know that we're going to do a proper job. We accept your product. We are saying that that product must be must correspond to that of another department. That's all I'm saying. In other words, we must all sing from the same hymn sheet. That's the difficulty. We all want to sing good singing in Africa. But instead of that, it's one answer. We just have the same sheet. So now nobody starts with one standard and the other one. That's all we're saying. And that shouldn't be asking for too much. And that shouldn't take, that type of exercise shouldn't take more than 15 minutes because we have agreed. We would like to pass this NEMA bill exactly as it is. We're not saying add one more full stop or subtract anything. All we're saying, all I'm saying is that now, what we are saying should be the same version by the other department. So there should be no naughtiness by somebody down the line. Because we've seen this in the past. We had a situation where we had two ministers, and then one person says, but that's not what you agreed upon. So somebody after the agreement went and tipped the text. That's the point. Not really. That's the crux of the matter. People agree, and then some functionary goes down there and says, this is an agreement, but you know, they're not here now. And then when they do the typesetting, then another version is smuggled in. So we'll have a president, a speaker in the National Assembly. Honorable members, so people come and speak, and then the bill is passed. Next, it becomes the mechanical thing because people want to go home, et cetera, et cetera. So you will have the problem coming when the president is going to sign the bill. That's where people will say, but it can't be the same parliament. We're not aware of this. Where did the rules come from? You see.
Thanks, Chair. Now, Acting Chair. I agree that sort of seeing the MPRDA in its final form, the amendment bill, is very important. I also, accept the state law advisors are not going to create two pieces of amendments which are not going to talk to each other. I mean, it would complicate the process further. Obviously it's desirable that members of portfolio committees get to see all the amendments before, and I think everyone is in agreement here. I'm personally of the view that the transitional arrangements are a very good idea, and I'm glad that it's been advised that it is at least possible, because then as legislators we don't hand over the power that we have been given, and our powers are limited themselves, as are the executive, but one of the powers we do have is to make law. and I am reluctant to leave any agreement just between ministers, irrespective of the power of the intergovernmental bill, and that if we can write it into law, then it would, I would argue, be far more responsible. I mean, I would be quite keen to debate still the period. As I said in my previous comments, if we were working on a time frame of 18 months transfer of from the one regulations to the other, despite it still being under DME, that's a significant achievement, and I would think that, in fact, it probably would take that long. So I think arguing and debating that time frame is probably less important. I would argue that debating the ultimate time frame of transfer is probably more important in light of my previous comments of what I believe is an urgency. I suspect the hardest part of this is going to, in fact, be getting all the regulations working in DME, and if that can be achieved, and the transfer of actual officials and the making of the minister or the competent MEC the ultimate authority would be relatively easy, because you could still start planning for that transition from day one. It doesn't have to start from after the 18 months transition. All of these transitions we can start planning from day one. So I would like to see, I would like to see the transition actually put into the NEMA bill. It protects this committee far more, and it probably will also make the position going forward that little bit easier for this committee.
So, is there a response from the department?
I think the only response, I think that the issue, I mean, as I said before, the response is, I think that we will engage with the law advisors on the issue of the schedule, because on the schedule and how the transitional arrangement should be phrased. In relation to the ultimate transfer, I think that we kind of basically would await Parliament instructions on that, because what we have done is, in terms of the formal agreement that we've been given, we've implemented that. As I said, I think that is something that then Parliament must make a decision on and give us an instruction on, because as an official, from an official perspective, that isn't part of what our mandate was. But certainly, obviously, this is now in the Portfolio Committee, and the Portfolio Committee must take a view, and then the law advisors will obviously draft as the instruction from Parliament comes.
You want to leave? The way what? Okay, see you. The way forward is that we as a Portfolio Committee will instruct you to go to the DME and want their version, the latest version of the MPRTA. That's all. Then we come and just compare in the presence of the state law advisors and pass the bill. Simple.
I hear that, Comrade Mugwena, but I think that if they do not have that, they cannot detain us. Let's say they have not done any work on this matter. We cannot be held a ransom by that. If they have not done that, please let me say my share. If they have not done that, we go ahead. Finish. We are not going to wait for them forever. No way. If they have not done anything on this thing, if that law, then we will run the risk of having two laws that are going different ways. It's what the government, if there's a problem, the president will deal with that. So we should go beyond our hands. No. The point is this: if they are not, we have got to pass this legislation. I'm saying whether DME complies or not at the level of what you are requesting is not in our hands. If they do not comply, I get if they do what you are saying, it's fine. If they don't do it, we're not going to wait for another 3 years for them to do that. We're going to go ahead with the schedule and commit them to whatever agreement that was there. That's the point I'm making.
All right. Honourable Morgan.
Thanks, Chair. I might just repeat one of the comments while you're out. I agree that we shouldn't be held ransom by the Department of Minerals and Energy entirely. I think the schedule is an important idea that if they don't get their bill out, let's say they don't get it out this year, it's a possibility that they won't, actually. I mean, be realistic about it. The MPRDA, in its current amendment form, has been before Parliament now for, well, probably over a year. It was sent back in October last year. So this isn't the only problem in the bill, the environmental authorization. There, in fact, are a huge amount of other very, very contentious parts of the MPRDA that don't specifically relate to this committee. So they're going to have major, major challenges. If indeed this bill, the NEMA bill, must go ahead in your opinion, Chair, then I think that the schedule is very, very important. Seeing the MPRDA is certainly desirable. I accept we shouldn't be held ransom, though. And secondly, if we can request, and perhaps we can debate this in the presence of the officials, that a drafting of an actual transition be given to us and for the transitional arrangements. I'm not talking about the regulations. I'm talking specifically about the ultimate competent authority being moved over in a period of time, because we have been advised that that is possible and may even be desirable compared to merely the drafting of a committee report. And in that way, we're not held ransom by DME in any way, and we actually put on the table what, in fact, they have to legislate for in their own time. And they'll know exactly what is on our minds and what piece of law we have passed, and how they're going to have to be concurrent with it, knowing critically two things. One, which has been agreed, that the NEMA regulations will prevail, and two, is that at a predetermined time, their right to provide environmental authorizations will automatically revert, and that in the transition, they have enough time to work to achieve that goal.
Honourable Morgan, I just want to get this for the record. Are you saying, madam, that a report that would be adopted by Parliament would have no basis to effect this process, that instrument is a useless instrument, that we cannot resort to that instrument? Because that was the agreement we had with the DME at the parliamentary level, even though the participants were from the executive as well. I want to hear your view on this. I want to for the record.
Okay, I think what we should be focusing on is what is the extent of that content of that report. We must appreciate initiating legislation lies within the competence of the executive. In terms of the Constitution,
not
taking into account legislative proposals, but ultimately in the executive ambit, legislation is initiated by the executive.
Sure, but something, look, we can write any legislation if we want to.
That's what I'm saying. If we take into account what the situation we're facing now, an agreement between two executive competences, we have to ask ourselves, and this is what the point I was trying to make earlier, we have to ask ourselves the extent of that agreement. If this committee reports to the National Assembly and the report contains content that lies within the jurisdiction of the executive, would we as the legislature be competent to enforce that? Would we be competent to encroach in something that lies within the executive competence? Or would the report to the National Assembly lie squarely within matters that would fall within legislative competence or an oversight function? And this is the point that I was making earlier. When we're looking at legislation, we have an agreement between two ministers that this is how it will transpire over the next period of time in order to effect NEMA and the MRPD. the way I understand the matter is the honourable members are concerned that notwithstanding that agreement, the legislature in that process will have no power to enforce it if we leave it as an agreement. Parliament at this stage would like some guarantee that there's a level of enforceability in law to hold that agreement to account. And this is why I'm saying, I do not think that the report would be the best way forward. That's my view. I'm still of the opinion that a transitional arrangement to flesh out the interaction between these two pieces of legislation, how they are going to be merged, and the ultimate effect, not necessarily prescribing to a minister or encroaching on executive function, but in the transition or the drafting of those transitional provisions to give effect to what is ultimately wanting to be achieved, and how these pieces of legislation are merged, and also the process and the end product that comes out of it.
Something that just worries me, and I suspect my colleagues would probably also be worried, it's around the transitional arrangements and in respect of the competent authority, because I suspect we'll be reneging from an argument with DME, and it could threaten the current arrangements. There is not a lot that we're going to lose if we leave DME as a competent authority. And maybe at this point in time, we would prefer that you don't instruct us to include the three-year period on that matter. I'm just making a suggestion. I know members have got the right to exercise the discretion in that regard, but maybe then it's something that I would suggest the chair you'd have to also take up with the minister, because it is not within the agreement currently. It could set us back some miles from where we are currently in terms of the of implementing the agreement.
Jefferson, if you want us to be held ransom, then I think you should look at the schedule and the transitional provisions, because then we definitely are going to be held ransom. So my suggestion in that regard is that we don't. And to address Honourable Morgan's concerns in that regard, I'm not sure if you were here when Ms. McCourt indicated the process, but what happens is for the mining authorizations, and you expressed, Honourable Morgan expressed concern regarding the mining permits that are going to be issued over the next couple of years. If we delay this, we won't have the provisions and we won't have the environmental protection in place at this stage to deal with those applications, because then, the transitional provision, we're looking at a three-year period. If the concern is that there are going to be mining applications happening now, the sooner we get the NEMA provisions passed, the better off we're going to be in terms of ultimate mining applications, because there is the added safeguard that an environmental authorization needs to be given before a mining permit is issued.
Okay. We've got to move beyond this. We can't have this.
I feel like we're being held to ransom now, following the last comment, and I understand the frustrations, because we're saying if you don't do this, you have to accept something. It's not quite good enough, but if you don't do this, then Honourable Morgan's concerns are not going to be dealt with anyway. So, we all actually, I think we all feel at ransom here. I remain of the, and I understand the acting DG's concerns, and I think, it's ultimately the problem of departments talking to each other, executives talking to each other, and not enough of legislators talking to each other, actually. Because, I don't know, surely we are the ones who actually are able to make these decisions, irrespective of whether the ministers actually want these things or not. And we should be, I understand the DG, acting DG might have a few sleepless nights there and might have a few difficult phone calls from very, very senior people. But, if we were to pass this, then I would hope if the system truly worked in South Africa, then we would get those difficult phone calls from angry ministers and not you, because it certainly would not be your fault that it happened. It would be our fault. I mean, I think the chair would probably take the greatest call, but if you wanted to, you could give the minister an opposition member of parliament's number as well, and I would happily defend you all along the way. So I understand the realities of it, but I mean, what I'm keep on trying to get back to is, and what I feel very passionately about, and as does, I think, the chair and all of my colleagues here, is what are our rights to do in this process. And I think it's our job then to defend you as well, and I think the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism has acted in good faith through this entire process. We know the minister's view, we know the DG's views, we know the direct DDG of Environment Quality and Protection's views on this. So I accept it's difficult. Chair, I would certainly, I'm not sure how much we can actually do today, but I still think it's a good idea to put the schedule in and the transitional arrangements in and make what is already an imperfect piece of legislation, by everyone's acknowledgement, a better piece of legislation.
I think that two things. I think the first thing is, officials, we have to deal in realities. And the reality is that we got given an agreement, and the agreement says DME remains the competent authority for mining, and there's an 18-month transition. So that's what we were instructed to go ahead and do. The other reality is that you have the MPRDA as is, and unless DME agrees, the status quo is not going to change. So I think those are sort of the parameters within which we're dealing with, and you then have that agreement that gets to where we sit. Then, as I understand it, a desire in Parliament, and I think there needs to be a discussion within Parliament around how an ultimate transfer gets engaged. But we haven't negotiated that with DME, which is, I think, where our difficulty is. And our sense is that DME would probably, or certainly the people we deal with in DME would probably not agree, and I'm not certain where that would leave us. But I think that is for Parliament to resolve, and I don't want to engage further on that matter, because I think it must be dealt with through the parliamentary process. I think that the other issue is then that do appear to be a number of instruments within the suite of lawmaking that can be used to affect this. There are repealing one act through a schedule to another. I've just had a word with your parliamentary advisor. There's a possibility of a general laws amendment bill, but I think that might be a bit too late for that. There's the way transitional provisions are crafted, and it certainly seems to me that, I mean, clearly we are not going to conclude this today. We still do have the clause by clause part of the thing as far as we've got, but there is going to be some time to do a little bit extra work, and maybe over the next week or two, I mean, and I think also dependent on whatever gets discussed in Parliament, then kind of one could look at which of those instruments is the most useful instrument to allow the one process to proceed, even if the other one is not proceeding as fast. But I think that at least we do know that there are different ways that it can be done, and that we don't need to now kind of despair that this is not going to happen because the other bill is not proceeding as fast. So I think that really, I think that from our perspective, just to say that I'm not certain if we're going to move on to the clause by clause now or not the presentation of, no, not the clause by clause voting, Honourable Morgan, the presentation of what we're proposing. I think then there obviously are going to need to be a bit more work that's going to be done. In addition to what we've got here, there would then need to be some very close attention and work between the state, between the law advisors and ourselves, on getting to a formulation that is going to achieve whatever the desired outcome, whatever that desired outcome is, and we'll just take whatever instructions we get.
We're now going to have to move to the initial point-by-point presentation. You want to say something?
No.
Okay. What I would request, I keep forgetting your name. Okay, Ms. Gordon, is that if you could get a letter from yourself, okay, indicating your reservation about a committee report and its efficacy, okay? We would want that, because we are going to have to take this process forward, and therefore suggesting this, that the schedule is the best mechanism to deal with this transition. Okay? I think it would be important for us to get that letter. So that as we manage the process going forward, we've got that as a piece of informed opinion on the matter. I think now with up to you, Madam McCord.
Honourable members, I think first, before I go into the presentation, just a reminder that we are talking about three documents here. The first one is the original amendment bill. The clauses of the original amendment bill, or Bill 36, is not repeated in the slides. What are in the slides are the additional amendments required, or further amendments required, as a result of your earlier deliberation in November last year, as well as things that we need to include based on the agreement on around the mining issues. The second document that is of importance is actually the submission that looked like this, that basically summarized the one, and there is the two annexes to it. I think the first thing that is important about the annexes is Annexure B, which is probably the start of the schedule that we've been talking about, because Annexure B of the document goes clause by clause through the MPRDA and identify the clauses in the MPRDA and the MPRDA Amendment Bill that deal with environmental management, and then suggest what must happen with those clauses. So that is in Annexure B. Annexure C is then the actual text, which would ultimately be then in the correct format and whatever for the clause by clause. So the presentation is basically summarizing Annexure C, but Annexure C you cannot read without reading the original bill, because it's proposing further amendments to the original bill. So you need to look at Bill 36, or B36, and at Annexure C when we consider the presentation. The first slide is then just repeating what we've been saying. The effect of the agreement is that existing provisions in the MPRDA related to environmental impact assessments and environmental management in general, I think it's something that we're not emphasizing enough. We must remember that when we went into this huge negotiation process, we were talking about environmental impact assessment only. It has been, in the ultimate agreement, it's environmental management. So we are now talking about closure, rehabilitation, all of that stuff is now also within NEMA. It's not only environmental impact assessment. So I think it's important that it is not new law, that it might look like a lot of text, but it's actually either movement of text or law from the MPRDA to NEMA, or, and I think many of the members would be happy about that, elevating things that were previously only in regulations to the Act. Requirements on applicants, etc., that was previously in the EIA regulations have been elevated to the Act. And that is just to also get some consistency in the structure between the two acts that we are talking about. And then, that's basically point two, that some of the EIA provisions had to be moved to the Act itself. If we then look at the long title, it is, in terms of the document here, it's actually right at the end and not at the beginning. The long title, as you know, needs to introduce what are you aiming to achieve with the amendment. So we have to expand that quite a bit to introduce the whole issue about environmental management programs, the competency of the Minerals and Energy Minister, etc., and all of that has now been introduced into the long title. Then Clause 1, which talks about, Clause 1 is basically the definitions. We've added definition for applicants because the reason why we had to do that is that you need to differentiate between the applicant for an environmental authorization and the applicant for a mining rights permission, so we have to bring that in. Chief Inspector is used, so we have to use that. Community, as defined in the MPRDA Amendment Bill, and that results specifically, and that does not, and I think members must look carefully at what we've now included in 24.4a, which are the compulsory requirements that say all interested and affected parties must be consulted. thus define it further for mining to previous to specifically add requirements around previously disadvantaged communities directly affected by mining related activities. Next slide, please. Then environmental management program. We had a bit of predicament here, and the members would remember that we've discussed this before, the whole issue about that environmental management plan in NEMA is a difficult issue because there is in Chapter 3 a different type of environmental management plan than what we would use in an EIA context. Chapter 3 talk about the environmental management plan that must be developed by departments that deal with the environment, and it's on a very high level, while the EMPs that we use in terms of EIAs relate specifically to site and activity matters. We therefore decided to take the lead from the NPRDA and actually replace the site management to make it more than a plan, but to make it a program. In other words, to say it's not only what can and should be done, but who should do it and by when and how. So we've changed the concept of a site environmental management plan to be replaced by an environmental management program. We then had to add definitions from mining, from the NPRDA on exploration, holder, previous owner, and that is included. And we've expanded the definition of interested and affected party to include organs of state to ensure that there is adequate consultation of organs of state as part of the interested and affected parties consultation process. Those definitions, all mining area, production area, prospecting area, production, all of those definitions come from the NPRDA and need to be included because it is now within the ambit of NINA. Minister, this is the crux of doing the competency thing. Instead of doing a delegation, we had to define specifically what the minister is, referring to the Minister of Environmental Affairs and Tourism, and where the minister refers to the Minister of Minerals and Energy. And in the text, we've been very specific to say when it's both or when it's only one of the two ministers. Then all of those come from the NPRDA, apart from the public participation. Public participation was previously only defined in the regulations, but because we made it a compulsory requirement as a result of the discussions in November, it has now become important that we actually define it in the Act itself as well. So that is something that comes from your deliberations in November on the bill. Regional Mining Development Environmental Committee Residue Stockpile and owner of works of adopted from the NPRDA. Then if we go to Clause 2, Section 24.1, we are proposing a new provision, 24.1A, prescribing the requirements, obligations of an applicant applying for an environmental authorization. We currently have this in the regulations, but it is decided that it would be a good idea to actually elevate this to the Act, and also that is the approach that has been followed in the NPRDA before, instead of being more enabling on the Act level, you are actually already prescriptive on the Act level, making the Act more specific than enabling. Section 24.4A, you would remember that we've agreed to split 24, which are the issues to be consideration, to be taken into consideration for an environmental authorization, into a 4A, which are absolutely compulsory, and a 24B, which is compulsory where applicable, and the onus is then on the authority to prove the applicability thereof. And we have now made that amendment in the bill, and as per the instruction of the Portfolio Committee, we've moved public participation that was previously one of the discretionary requirements to a compulsory requirement that can never be exempted from. 24.4b, we've changed the wording to not read discretionary as before we used the word may, you would recall. It now reads must where applicable, and there is an onus on the competent authority to prove the applicability or not. 24.4b, we've added a subsection requiring assessment of impact on heritage resources. This was anyway a requirement in terms of the Heritage Resources Act, but it is something that often results in appeals because it's not specifically stated in NEMA, and we've also adopted that from the NPRDA. Section 244B, we further added subsections around consideration of issues around the management of stockpiles and mine residue, the management of mine closure, the financial provisions, and monitoring of compliance with closure requirements and conditions, and that has been added in the must where applicable. We cannot move that to must because obviously those things does not apply to activities other than mining at this point in time. Section 24C in Clause 3, we've added a section on the competency of the Minister of Minerals and Energy. 24C currently says when the Minister is the competent authority and when the MEC is the competent authority. The third area that has been added now is in light of the agreement, where will the Minister of Minerals and Energy be the competent authority for granting environmental authorizations? So this stems from the agreement between the ministers. In terms of Clause 5, we've a general statement, and it is here and also further on, we replace the whole concept of environmental management plan with the concept of environmental management program, and that is to minimize the confusion, as I previously explained, but also to align with the approach previously followed in the NPRDA. 24F is the section dealing with offences, and we believe this is something that we're actually getting from the NPRDA that strengthens NEMA quite substantially, is where in the past it was only offence to not comply with a condition of an authorisation. It is now also, would be, if this is accepted, an offence to not comply with an approved environmental management programme. Section 24G, members would recall, is the rectification of unlawful activities. We had quite a bit of a debate last time about the period that was not covered by Section 24G, and it was agreed that we should address that there are no gaps, so we've made editorial amendments to provide for that gap to be closed, and we've also added the provision for to require an environmental management program before Section 24G authorization can be granted. In terms of guidelines, and specifically in terms of this whole, the guideline provision, Section 24J, previously talked very much about procedures and administration only. A whole lot of the things that we can achieve as the new regulating policy authority around mining is to set guidelines around specific activities. So we added a provision there around sector guidelines. So guidelines are not only around procedures and processes, but also guidelines for specific activities. So we can do a guideline on sand mining, for example. In terms of exemptions, prohibit any exemption from Section 24.4a. Those are the compulsory requirements. But in light of the fact that the Minister of Minerals and Energy is an executing authority, we had to add a provision for the Minister of Minerals and Energy to also grant exemptions in exercising that function, but it's limited to 24.4b, which are the discretionary requirements in the process. 24.0 is a provision, again, it's something that has been partially addressed in the regulations before. The EIA regulations said what must be an environmental management plan. We have now elevated it to the Act. In addition to elevating it from the Act, we've been very, very detailed in terms of what must be included in an environmental management program, and a lot of those provisions were actually adopted from the Mineral Petroleum and Resource Development Act, and it includes things like financial provisioning, closure, rehabilitation, etc., that we didn't have in the EMP provisions previously. Then we insert the provisions in this clause describing the relation between the Regional Mining Development and Environmental Committee and the granting of environmental authorizations. This committee, established through the NPRDA, is very useful in the sense that it provide a regional authorities committee that have to consider objections and must then advise the Minister of Minerals and Energy before a decision can then be taken on granting of that environmental authorization. So it doesn't replace the appeal, it's a pre-decision objection, and then there is still the post-decision appeal. So there's a double stop there built in terms of dealing with concerns and objections. And as I said, this is adopted from the NPRDA. And then obviously also including the provisions of the NPRDA prescribing the obligations of the holder of a mining right. So you already have obligations as somebody that has received an environmental authorization, but it's further enforced by the fact that you're the holder of a mining right in terms of environmental management. And that has been adopted from the NPRDA. 24AO is very specific, as I said before, in terms of detailed provisions for what must be in environmental management programs. The term that will be, and we will now use that term for all applications, not only for mining. We've prescribed the content that need to be in the EMPR, and we also allow for the approval of an EMPR, which is not an authorization. It's you approve something that would be a condition of the environmental authorization ultimately. A new section 24P that sets out the requirements for the competent authority in granting environmental authorizations. 24.4, you would remember, set the things that you must take into consideration in doing an environmental authorization. This is now going a step further. It says before you can grant an environmental authorization, you must. So it's putting an obligation on the authority to say, for example, you may not grant an authorization in certain circumstances, and that is included in 24P. It's again elevating something that was in the regulations to the Act now, making it much stronger. We then insert provisions to allow amendments of environmental authorizations, which we had before, but also EMPRs, and also to allow the Minister of Minerals and Energy to amend environmental authorizations, which is then obviously subject to appeals again. Insertion of provisions stipulating obligations of the holder of an environmental authorization. It's also something that we've adopted and adapted from the NPRDA and elevated from the EIA regulations. We have insert provision for from the NPRDA prescribing obligations of holder of mining rights or permit holders in terms of environmental management. In other words, you are the holder of an environmental authorization, which means you have to implement the conditions, but it's further strengthened by the fact that you are a permitted mining right, you have a mining right allocated to you. Section 24Q is the financial provisions for remediation of environmental damage. This is something that we think is a big gain for NEMA from the NPRDA. We have some provisions in Section 28 around recovering costs, but this is specifically about upfront financial provision, and there is certainly opportunity to expand this beyond mining to, for example, environmental degradation by huge industrial complexes, waste management activities, etc., to say that in future we may be able to also use the financial provision for remediation that's currently in place for minerals and energy or for mining activities for other activities as well. Thank you. Then the 24R is around monitoring and performance assessment. That is adopted and adapted from the NPRDA. We had some monitoring compliance provisions in NEMA. It was generally not very strong, and this is now enabling requirements to monitor and report on performance and for an EMPR and EA to be amended to improve environmental performance. In other words, if we've approved an EMPR that say you only have to do X, but it's not covering the environment sufficiently, we can now, based on that monitoring, amend a requirement that was previously set and say now you have to do Y as well. Q24F is around the issuing of closure certificate that is adopted and adapted from the MPRDA and is obviously a very important thing in terms of closing out a mining activity and ensuring rehabilitation. And it basically adopted the provisions from the MPRDA in that regard, including the slides will talk about DWAF's agreements, but it's actually beyond only DWAF. It is all authorities that hold any jurisdiction on environmental legislation agreement must be obtained before a closure certificate can be issued. And that is the additional amendment.
A comment. I think for us, this has been a very complex and interesting process because when we went into the detail of the MPRDA, we discovered that in actual fact there are things in there. It's quite a detailed, it's stipulating quite a lot of detail what needs to happen. And when we looked at what that detail was, a lot of us appear to be detailed that in fact in law rather than in regulation might be a very worthwhile thing to have. So I think that to our surprise, we discovered that there were things in the MPRDA that really do, in fact, strengthen environmental management. And we feel that it makes for, in fact, in relation to a number of things, for in fact, a much more stringent and robust piece of legislation.
Comments,
questions
for members?
Say, the text is then attached as the last part of the annexure. In the last part of the package, you have the actual, this is a summary of what is in that text and the explanation of the text, but the text you have as well.
This order of the slides was slightly there. It's actually slides after the thank you. Don't know how that happened. No. The thank you is in the wrong place.
Oh, okay.
My apologies. It's on page 21 of the printout, if I can. I don't know how that happened. I cannot blame Eskom, but it's my own load shedding here.
And the chaos of this morning,
yes. It's a new clause. Thank you. Thank you, Tanisha. The section 42 currently deals with the minister's ability to delegate functions. We have now just expanded that, but with specific restrictions saying exactly what may and may not be delegated by the minister of DME in terms of his or her competency, and it must be in writing, may be subject to conditions, it may be withdrawn, and it does not prevent the minister from exercising powers him and herself. That's pretty standard in terms of delegations. In terms of clause 9, addition of section 43, that's 1A and 1B, to clarify the appeal mandates of ministers of TEED and MNE. So it's assigning the Minister of Environmental Affairs and Tourism as appeal authority for environmental authorizations, the Minister of M&E to be the appeal authority for process-related issues. Now, the reason why we had to include the latter part is that in terms of the PADJA, any administrative decision can be appealed. In other words, the acceptance of the scoping report to say, you have submitted the scoping report, can be appealed. Now, administratively, it doesn't make sense for that type of appeal to be considered by the Minister of Environmental Affairs and Tourism because it's procedural leading up to the environmental authorization. And that is just to make that differentiation. Then, in terms of Clause 10, that is the transitional arrangements where we've provided for the period not covered by the rectification clause. And I think that brings us into the last one, which is the transitional amendments allowing for this 18 months. And that is something that was the, based on today's discussion, we're going to have to rework the wording on in terms of how we face the transitional arrangement if we add a schedule to the bill. And the thank you should be now.
Honourable Morgan, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks, Chair. I'm just going through, thank you for those amendments as well. They're pretty dense in order to get one's head around them immediately. Just to go back to the original bill, I often feel like we're forgetting everything beyond mining in this bill. With regards to page 5 of the original bill, around about line 50, there was a suggestion that I made last time. I'm trying to see if it's been included here, and I can't see it. And as far as I could see, it was accepted by my colleagues in the committee that the assessors also be registered in accordance with prescribed procedures. So that it wasn't just the practitioner, it was in fact the people who do the assessments. Has that been included yet?
It isn't explicitly, although I think that when it came up, what we did explain is in this process with the in the establishment of the registration authority for environmental assessment practitioners includes categories of assessors, and one of those categories is people who do the review. So in the registration authority, when that comes into effect, anybody who reviews environmental impact assessments or environmental authorizations would also have to be registered and therefore would have to be able to demonstrate the qualifications and the competence in order to obtain their registration. So I'm not certain, I can't remember what we finally concluded in terms of this, but I remember that kind of we explained that they're not excluded from the registration system. Yeah, they're regarded as practitioners and they would have to register.
Are we going to put down the backup measures on conditions or it can be any condition, just the clarity there, on the new clause, that's your page 21. The delegation. Then if the minister delegates to function to the DG, so are we going to put down the backup measures as to when and how, or we leave it open?
Honourable Member, I think that the conditions is in terms of, it's not the conditions that can come out of an authorisation, it's the conditions for the delegation. So it is to the discretion of the Minister of Minerals and Energy, what is his conditions for delegating the power that is vested in him to a member, to the DG of Minerals and Energy, or another official officer of DME. This is a very standard delegation clause. It's similar to how it's worded in for the Minister of Middle of Deed or any acts that allow for a delegation of power.
I just want to ask you just a general question. question. It has to do with the 24M. On the exercise of discretion. Is this sort of too much power, this discretion? Are there enough safeguards that this discretion will not be abused either by an MEC or a minister? Are these three safeguards enough?
I think, Chair, maybe to answer it, I think that we had a very long debate in the original hearings around what the powers of exemption were. And what we did is that we distinguished between 244A, which are the compulsory requirements, which may not be exempted at all. So in 244A, there's no exemption from anything in 244A. And remember, we moved public participation into 244A. And then 244B, we said that those were the ones that were discretionary. But we placed an onus of proof on the executing authority by qualifying it by saying we're applicable. And in other words, what that means is that the executing authority is going to, in issuing any exemption, is going to need to be able to demonstrate the burden of proof now sits with government to say we issued this exemption because it was applicable and it was applicable for the following reasons. And so in terms of the Provision of Administrative Justice Act, we've put in stricter requirements of proof there than there is in general at the moment in NEMA around any kind of exemption. So I think that what we did in your amendments in moving, firstly in adding in where applicable, we took public participation as no longer discretionary. It has to happen. You may not exempt anything from public participation. And then secondly, by putting in where applicable, and you will remember it was also on the advice, I think the State Law Advisor assisted us there, it places quite a stringent burden of proof. I think that not to allow any exemptions at all is probably going to mean that one is going to, the flexibility that we wanted in the system, where in fact you were creating the space to be able to give much more attention to things that were serious and that potentially have a very serious and detrimental effect in the environment, as opposed to those that can be dealt with in a different kind of way, would then go, and we would be back to where we deal with everything from small things that have minimal impact on the environment to power stations in the same way, is going to be the effect of doing that for us. I mean, really, I think that it would be important. We agree that exemptions are something that could be abused and you need to circumscribe them. But I think that not to have them at all would create a set of other problems. So I think that as I understand it, was the solution that was proposed in the previous hearing. And the reason that it's specific is that if the Minister of Environmental Affairs has it, then the Minister of Mineral and Energy Affairs has it. Yes. Elisa,
Chair, just to add is that we are not taking away the safeguards that we've put in 24 M2 and 3, which in addition to the fact that it's limited to 244B, we still say the Minister or MEC may only grant an exemption contemplated in Subsection 1 if the granting of the exemption is unlikely to result in significant impact, the provision cannot be implemented in practice, or the exemption is unlikely to adversely affect the rights of interested and affected parties. So those safeguards must also, you can only grant exemption from 244B and must be able to prove that 24M3 is still adhered to. So it's limiting the provisions and it's putting on checks and balances that you have to, you can only exempt from these provisions and then you must consider it in terms of these criteria as well.
Do you want to comment? Sir,
experience that he would like to look at in more detail are gaining the exemption. Secondly, the issue of appeals, especially now that the Minister of MME has the right to assess appeals in terms of process, which for instance in Italy is often a critical issue. And three, the issue of delegating powers of the Minister of Mineral Energy to the DG and other officials. Now, that might sound like a normal clause, but what concerns me, just off the top of my head, is that you're getting one minister who's giving powers to another minister to, in fact, delegate powers to that minister's DG and officials. And that's what worries me, because normally it's written within the same minister. I need to look at it from that point of view. And then this issue of where applicable, I'd like to have a look at that in more detail, because I like the idea of defining exemption in terms of where applicable. But I just need to look at how to define. Because sometimes where applicable could also be argued that an issue is applicable. An official might argue that it is applicable, and the fixed parties might say that how do you justify it? Thank you.
Transitional provision that we've said that we would ask the law advisors to relook at. So I think that so that there's going to be further work done. I think the concern that was raised was, what if the one bill doesn't get passed? You then don't want this to not come into effect. So I think that we agreed earlier that the state law advisors are going to find a formulation that would mean that you wouldn't kind of have this as a never thing. Yeah.
Further comments, colleagues?
Jake, I said one thing I'm sort of worried about, and I'm pushing my luck into the last thing we get, but we representing there's a dozen or more organizations out there that couldn't come today from far away. We've been back. Now, the one thing that they're worried about is, will they have an opportunity and have further input in terms of the new amendment? And I know that on the board, raise the issue in terms of someone, one of them, in terms of that now go out both bills. Okay, fine, we're just talking about the one bill now. But we haven't actually answered that comment in terms of whether we're going to have an opportunity of being able to give written submission in terms of the public.
Look, I think that we're unlike other public hearings on this. But definitely, if there's any formal written thing, we've got 6 weeks before the final decision. But more importantly, I think we will be meeting again probably on the 8th of April. So if there's anything you want to send to us before by the 8th of April, send it early so that we can look at it.
I think there's one other concern, if I may say. I remember from Dr. Pretorius' input that in the areas where there's a lot of mining applications coming, the advertisement of an application just goes to the little local office, and they're about 120 miles away. How will people be able to know what kind of to enable
how will notification of applications and at what stage can input be made by the funder?
Okay. That's the point that I'm raising, Madam Roo, is that you've got some time to comment, raise all the concerns that you're having, so that you can look at them when we finalise the legislation. Okay. We had public hearings. I know that there are unanticipated issues that emerged, such as this MPRTE dimension that is now a fundamental part of this new bill. I don't think it's that fundamental. I think that people can write. I'm saying you can speak to whoever you want to speak to. They can write to us, but before the heat of April. We had public hearings on this. But we've had public hearings on this.
In other words, you're not having
any more. No, I've said that. We're not going to have another public hearing on this.
And you're not having public
hearings. What I'm saying, ma'am, is that if there are other issues, we're essentially indulging you. Okay? We've had public hearings, but I accept that there were other amendments, particularly from the MPRTE, that are substantially different from what was originally tabled. On that, people can comment, but we're not going to. We've got a tight schedule around finishing this legislation.
Right.
Yeah.
How will people know what the amendments are that they are to respond to?
Okay. Can I say something?
Basically, in our view, what we've done is there was a clause in the original B36, it said the Minister of Mineral and Energy Affairs will be a competent authority for mining. In the public hearings, people came and they commented on that. So people said, yes, it's a good idea, no, it's a bad idea, we want it this way, we want it that way. It was extensively commented on. In the agreement that was made, what was finally went beyond that to say that the Minister of Deep is the appeal authority, so that the entire function doesn't rest in the the Minister of Mineral and Energy Affairs, and that there is a set then of, if you go ahead with that, that there's a set of consequent clauses in the MPRTA that are in law at the moment that need to be brought over into NEMA. And apart from what Lisa was explaining, what she was saying, what is in the MPRTA that as a result of that would need to come over into NEMA? It's not new law. It's not anything that doesn't exist in our law at the moment. It's saying, take it out of the MPRTA, put it into NEMA, and there might need to be some editorial changes in order that the context of NEMA is addressed in the way that it is brought over. And I think that that is what is happening in relation to this. In relation to exemptions, there was a very long debate in the portfolio committee. In fact, when you went through the clause by clause and commented, I thought that there was a decision that had been taken. I think that I have great sympathy for the issue of public participation, but there is a huge risk. We are all between a rock and a hard place, and the rock and the hard place is essentially that if this doesn't go through, but if this is not read in the Assembly on the 9th of May, basically it falls away entirely, and you're sitting in a situation with the status quo in mining prevailing until after the elections next year, when there is a new government, potentially a new set of ministers, a new portfolio committee, and then we must reopen it again. And I think that all of us are finding ourselves in a very difficult situation in relation to the reality of the time frame that suits us. But I think that fundamentally, if you look at the MPRDA and you look at what is proposed here, it is a translation of clauses in the MPRDA into NEMA in order to be able to give effect to the decision that environmental management be regulated by NEMA and not be regulated by the MPRDA.
Possible to think a bit creatively about it and have a statement or some sort of way of communicating with the public that says these were the concerns, this is what has happened, and this is how we've dealt with it. If you want to comment further, then send your comments to such and such an email address or something of that nature. But I do think the public need to know that, yes, there were those concerns around the MPRDA bill, and this is how it has been dealt with in the legislature and in our committee and in the National Assembly, that we have taken those concerns to heart, and we have and are dealing with them to the absolute best of our capacity. But I do think that something needs to be done to tell people out there.
No, Chair, I think what you covered somehow, because I was thinking of the same to say, if something can be put down to say, post the public hearing, these are the amendments that we had. If whoever feels to contribute, but let's not move away from our deadline. That means all our deliberations will be a total exercise from last year to this year. I fully agree with you, Chairperson. The public was given a chance. Maybe for this part of amendment, they can give that email with immediate effect, because nothing should be beyond the 8 or 9. Nothing should be beyond that. We are not setting ourselves. So we do need to move forward. Thank you.
Don't ask us to drag our feet on this matter. We are open. Anyone wants to write to us, then write to us. People can raise whatever. You have been here, you are a representative of a coalition of forces. So what's the big deal? I mean, if you've got concerns to raise, just raise them. We would be listening, we'd be willing to listen, to engage. We've got to finish this. It's not an ideal situation, but we've got to move forward. I don't want us to unduly delay this. So I'm looking forward from the LRC submitting. Any of their affiliates can submit something, but we have to move forward on this legislation. We have to finalize it. We can't rest on this for longer than it already has. Let's move on. I think that we've had the amendments, an update on the amendments. I don't think we can really go to the clause, because we've really given a background context to that. Then hopefully when we meet again on the 8th, we will do that exercise. We will first address the issue of the desirability. I don't want us to do that now. Just apply our minds over the next few weeks. We discuss the desirability on the 8th. We'll go clause by clause, and then we'll meet again on the 10th to finalize the motion. So we'll be applying on the 10th, madam. because we will have to, after the 8th, the state law advisors will have to work on the legislation so that we can do the clause by clause and adopt it. Honorable Morgan?
thanks, Chair. I agree that obviously it can't happen now, and that meeting again on 8th of April is a good thing. I just wonder whether we've given enough indication as a committee to the state law advisors on the issue of the transitional arrangements. I accept that, although I don't like it, that a certain amount of talking has to happen at executive level. Does that, however, stop us now requesting that those kind of things are at least drafted for our presentation for those days? You know, so you can actually consider whether you want it or not. The idea of if we can actually mandate that the schedule and the transitional arrangement is in fact drafted for consideration on that day, so that our own process is not set back by whatever discussions have to happen at an executive level.
I think even ideas, I felt before more clear, because I was at the heart of these negotiations with both the executive and our counterpart in DME. The agreement that we had with them, although the schedule, the agreement we had with them was a report to Parliament. That was the agreement I had with them. Now, according to the advice that we're getting from Ms. Gordon, is that may not be the most appropriate way forward. Now, I have to go back to those negotiations and talk through this issue of the schedule. So there's no guarantee, because this is not only in our hands. There are many players in this, and I hope all of us can understand the complexity of the situation. So drafting the schedule, I think, is a good idea. I think let's have a draft, let it come through, but whether it should be tabled, it will depend on how far these negotiations will have gone. With that, thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned. There's, again, as always, a freely available lunch for people to... we are the only people who have to afford free lunch.